Welcome back to another episode of The Political Life. Today we are coming to you from California. We are coming to you with a tech startup. I don't really know if it's a startup, but we're going to hear more about it. We are going to be speaking with the chairman and CEO, Hugh Martin, of Lacuna Technologies. And we are going to hear all about that. Obviously, we are not in San Francisco. We wish we were. But we're not. Everything is remote these days. What I would describe, Lacuna is addressing the gap between where we have all the streets have gone digital, but the cities have not. Lacuna seems to be addressing the gap in between those two. They have LA Department of Transportation is a client. And so they're a little bit beyond a startup, obviously. And so, Hugh, welcome to the show. And is that a fair description that I just gave?
It's fair for the description, what you covered, but I think there's a lot more to the story, obviously.
Yes. Well, welcome to the show. So tell us, let's jump right into it. Tell us about Lacuna.
Well, a way to think about it, I think, would be when you're out in the public right-of-way, so you're in a street driving around a city, when you're out there, the way that the Department of Transportation provides an experience that's safe and meets the goals of the city and the residents is they use signs, like speed limit signs, stop signs. Sometimes they use curbs or paint, and sometimes they use traffic signals. That's the world that a city deals with. And in the last 10 years, I think probably first starting with navigation applications, but then rideshare companies and scooters and pretty soon sidewalk delivery robots, all of these new technologies have shown up, which offer tremendous benefits to the residents, but also can sometimes have unintended issues that come up because of them. And so the cities, unfortunately, because all of those things operate in a digital world, the city has no way to understand what's going on or do the things that they sometimes do to really help out. And so what Lacuna is about is working with software tools that give cities the ability to manage all of these new transportation modes in a way that works out for the cities and the residents.
And when you say manage, what does that mean?
Let's take an example. So scooters really showed up in late 18, early 19 in LA, the electric scooters. And the city had no idea. They just basically showed up. And so, for instance, there were a lot of scooters. I'm sure you've heard stories about scooters being thrown into the ocean or set on fire, but in particular around an area around Venice Beach, they were all over the beach and they were on the boardwalk. And so, for instance, if you were a handicapped person, you couldn't even get up and down the boardwalk because it was just littered with scooters. And so what LA did is they implemented a software system called MDS. And what this system did, it's essentially, think of it as a mobility operating system for the city, and it allows them to express policy digitally. And policy is how the city typically tries to get the outcomes that they're interested in. In this particular case, what they said is, listen, we're going to put up a geofence, a software line that's a block off of the Venice Beach boardwalk, and we'd like you scooter companies to not cross that line, let your riders cross that line. And so by establishing that, all of a sudden now the scooter companies had to say, okay, well, we don't want our riders to get closer than that to the boardwalk. And so within 6 months, there were no scooters on the beach and just a couple on the boardwalk, and they were all parked relatively neatly about a block away. And so the city, just by writing a few lines of code using the system, was able to get an outcome that was really important to them.
That's very interesting. What a great example. And then for, so obviously they could track the scooters, and would anything, so if I was on a scooter and I was not supposed to go, you know, into this certain area and I did, would the scooter company then receive some kind of ticket or violation or something? Or what would happen physically at the location if you violated that geofence?
Yeah, so it's really up to whatever the city's policy is. I think what the city wants to do is have a mutually beneficial relationship, and I think the scooter companies understand that it's probably not a good thing and it's not sustainable that their riders are clogging up the boardwalk. So it was largely a matter of notification as opposed to fines, but I mean, the city could decide to do something different.
Got it. And then the city could track whether or not it was actually, if they were actually following the desire to keep the scooters out of that area.
And I just want to emphasize that, because you used the word a couple times, track. The city's not tracking you on the scooter. What they're doing is they're saying, oh, a scooter ended up at this location. That's what they're doing. It obviously, again, it depends on what the city would like to do, but the city's really not interested in understanding every second where somebody is or isn't.
And do you work with any, can you help cities interact or manage, say, delivery type vehicles, or with anything like, you know, train or airports or bus stations?
Yeah, so this is very, very early days. And what cities have done is they've gotten together and they've formed something called the Open Mobility Foundation, which is, for those in the tech world, is a lot like the Linux Foundation in that there's some software that is open source, meaning anyone can use it or run it, including the cities themselves. And that software is then managed by this nonprofit foundation called the Open Mobility Foundation. And different than what happens with tech-driven foundations, this foundation is actually governed by cities. So cities can start to talk about, well, here's what we'd like to do about various outcomes. And so the first thing that cities were trying to deal with as an immediate problem were scooters. So that's what they and the foundation focused on. I think increasingly an area that they're really interested in now is curbs and curb management, in that, you know, especially with COVID and going forward, there's been a ton of demand, especially in larger cities, to get access to the curb for drop-off and pickup. And so what the cities would like to be able to do is to manage that activity better and help, you know, the freight operators be even more efficient in how they get use of that curb. So, for instance, there might be a reservation system, for instance, to try and make that whole thing run more smoothly.
Okay. And tell us about the beginnings of Lacuna.
Well, the last company, I'm sort of a serial entrepreneur, and the last company that I had started back in 2012 was a, quote, smart city company. We had the idea that, all right, what we're going to do is change out over 1 billion streetlights around the world to make them LEDs. When we do that, why don't we add a radio and some sensors and maybe a platform on top of that, and cities could become smart, and there are a lot of different things they could do. And what I really learned from that experience is that the idea of a tech company deciding what the right answer was without really understanding what the customer wants or thinks is probably not going to be a big success. So I ended up selling the company to Verizon, who wanted to use the technology to help them build out their fiber optic networks and 5G networks, which was all terrific. They asked me to move to New Jersey, which I did do. And one thing I did is I spent a lot of time with departments of transportation. And that really kind of opened my eyes. It, for the first time ever, I saw what it was like to be in a city running this department with the tools that you have. We just described them earlier. And having all of these tech companies in particular building these new transportation opportunities, which were had huge benefits, but also had some unintended negative outcomes. And yet the cities had no way to deal with it. So I thought, you know, I would like to work with cities to really help them figure out how to manage all of the things that go on in today on the ground and maybe even the future, even airspace, around transportation. And so that was sort of the beginning of Lacuna.
And when was that?
That was in 2018.
And how many employees? And you signed up LA, a pretty big client. How many employees do you have and how are things going?
We have 40 employees.
Wow.
And, you know, what's really interesting is what this whole COVID crisis has done for cities, which is while a lot of the issues that we were focused on helping them with have gone down quite a bit because there's just a lot less traffic, it's going to come back. And in particular, cities are really concerned that there's going to be an increased use of single occupancy vehicles because people are just not going to want to be on trains and buses and even ride hail companies devices. And so what I think they're concerned about is how are they going to manage all of this traffic? The demand that they've seen from the use of curb, they don't believe is going to go away. And so there's going to be a lot of increased pressure on all of the use of the public right-of-way. And so they'd like to now get the tools and the methodologies in place that allow them to better control that. So it's actually a very, very busy time for us right now.
And so when you founded the company, you were in New Jersey, and now you're in California?
No, I left New Jersey and came out here, and it was founded in California.
Okay. And so tell our listeners, what is the community... I mean, you could have, I have a feeling that you went out to the Bay Area because you needed funding, you needed the kind of people you were going to hire. What is the Bay Area like for a tech entrepreneur like yourself? And why is it so helpful to be there?
You know, that's, I've been out here in this environment now for over 40 years. It's a super interesting question. Some people will say, oh, it's because Stanford was here and that's where it got started. I think the best way I think about that is to say, okay, what as an entrepreneur, what do I need? And the things you need are obviously you need engineers or people that can help you build the company. You need money. And if you're doing hardware in particular, you may need access to the ability to prototype or so on and so forth. And there's been a huge... over the years, this is the place to be where you could very quickly get access to the venture community. There's tons of engineers in the area, so I think that's the primary reason the Valley has been successful. Back in 1998, I started a company called ONI Systems Optical Networking Incorporated. And we had a terrific idea about how to do optical networking, not long haul, which is what Nortel and other companies were doing, but actually within cities. And so we went out and said, okay, great, we need a whole bunch of optical engineers. And it turns out there were none. There were very few people in the Bay Area that actually understood optical technology. And so what we ended up doing is discovered that Nortel had spent years building a lot of optical technologies and engineers, but they were all up in Ottawa, Canada. And so we spent a lot of time in Ottawa convincing great people that they needed to move to the Bay Area and that that would be an awesome thing both for them and their families. And so we ended up hiring like over 125 engineers from Canada and bringing them to US, all because, again, when you're building a new company, you need one of the raw materials you need is great minds and engineers.
And you spent some time at Kleiner Perkins, and one of the jobs you had there for a while was, you had two of the best job titles I've ever seen. One is entrepreneur in residence. That sounds incredible. And also CEO coach.
So entrepreneur in residence is a sort of a generic title for someone who likes to build companies or start them, who doesn't have a current company that they're working on right now. And especially if you're relatively experienced, any venture firm would like to have you in and around their set of companies that they're working with. So, and their hope is, of course, that you would get interested, involved in, and then try and get involved in and then work with one of the companies they have, or bring ideas into the firm so that they could invest and then work with you. The CEO coach is more, one of the things that's true in this whole business is that there are, you know, there are a number of different players when you're starting a company. So there's the investment group, there's the management team, and then, of course, the customers and so on. But the dynamics of how all that works sometimes can be a little rough. So, for instance, sometimes you can get an entrepreneurial team that says, well, okay, well, the venture investors, they have one point of view, which is they want to own as much of the company as they can, and they may not understand the value that a venture firm brings. And so you've got a little bit of a chasm in communication. And so what's really helpful is to have someone who is also an entrepreneur who can work with the team, the new startup, and say, hey, listen, these guys are really on your side. They can add a lot of value. Let's think about how you could tap into their network or whatever. And so it's coaching is probably not exactly the right word, but it's really to be a friend of the entrepreneurial team.
And making the different teams work together for finding common ground.
Yep.
Well, I think I like that title, Entrepreneur in Residence. I don't have any experience. But I think I may adopt that for myself, Entrepreneur
in
Residence.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll give you an example. In 1998, this company, ONI, that I described earlier, I was the Entrepreneur in Residence at Kleiner, and this young engineer from Nortel happened to come in the front door and said to one of the partners there, Kevin Compton, hey, I've got this great idea for this optical networking thing. And Kevin said to me, he said, hey, Hugh, could you just work with this guy and see whether or not that there could be a company here? And I did, and we figured out pretty rapidly that this could be a really amazing opportunity. So that company was started in 1998. We went public in 2000. So in 2 years, we built a product and had it installed in customers. We went public in 2000, and that was the heyday of optical networking. So it was incredibly successful. And then we ended up 2 years later selling it to a much larger competitor. And all of that value to Kleiner Perkins happened because I was there, and the idea came in their front door, and then, of course, with all of the connectivity that Kleiner has, the company was able to tap into their big network, and that all helped also with building the company.
And at a place like Kleiner Perkins, how many entrepreneurs in residence would they have at any given time? I mean, a handful, or?
My information is going to be really dated because, you know, this is obviously 18, 20 years ago, but typically there were anywhere from 1 to 3, maybe 4.
Mm-hmm. And do you still stay in touch with your colleagues from Kleiner Perkins?
I stay in touch with the people that were there at that time. Most of them have retired or have gone on or doing
different things.
Yep.
So getting back to your current company, you have 40 employees. Give us kind of the breakdown. Engineers, salespeople, what are they all doing?
I would say at least half of them are engineers. We spend a lot of time, as you might imagine, working with cities. So what I would typically call government affairs is an important piece of what we do. Understanding what cities care about, what trends there are going on around transportation. So I'd say it's not so much sales as business development. And then we have a pretty good sized operations team, because once a city wants to implement a system like this, we have to be able to go in and understand what kind of policies they're interested in, how they'd like to work with all of the mobility providers on an ongoing basis, and then help them customize and implement the system so that it does what they want.
So can you walk us, so do you use any outside salespeople? And maybe salespeople isn't the right word, but reaching out to various cities to see if they're interested in considering your product?
Yes, we do. We do that. It's a relatively small team because we work really closely with the Open Mobility Foundation and the cities that are members there because they obviously believe in the idea of using these tools. And so it's not like we just have to go banging on the door of an N number of cities. It's more, as I said, of a business development function.
Yeah, it's more organic. You kind of know who's interested and who's asking questions
exactly.
All that. Can you walk us through another example when you think back over the past 6 months, and you don't have to tell us, you know, the city or the county that's come on board and some of the things they were looking to do or accomplish that you've been working with them on?
Well, so without getting into specifics, because it's not been formally announced, an area that is a lot like a city is an airport. So they have a defined geographic area that they effectively manage, and they have many of the same issues that a city might have in that they've got a fixed set of roadways, they typically have terminals, and then there are a lot of there's a lot of demand for the use of all of that. I'm going to call it right of way, and so they care a lot about making sure that the users of the airport, you know, the passengers, have a great experience. And so not a great experience is sitting in at the entrance to the airport in a huge traffic pileup, hoping that you're going to get to the terminal on time. So typically, the way airports have dealt with it in the past is they've added signage or built additional roads and so on. And so one of the things that's really interesting about the use of the kind of tools that cities have developed for managing their public right-of-way is applying, instead of building roads or establishing certain new rules or adding more police to move people around, is to actually use digital policies to say, okay, you know what, we'll allow this many vehicles to go into this area, or this curb is going to be dynamically assigned for use by ride hail companies and so on and so forth. So airports, I think, are going to be also another very exciting area for tools like this.
Very interesting. Are you finding that during this time of COVID, that business is on hold, is picking up, no different? How are you all adapting to the current environment?
Yeah, you know, what I would say is that many of the issues that were causing cities to implement or think about tools like this and technologies have been lessened because there's just less people on the road, there's less people flying, for instance, in the interest of airports. But everyone knows it's going to come back, and so this is actually a great time to think about moving to new technologies and getting them implemented. So from our point of view, we're busier than we've ever been.
And do you have a lot of competitors in this space?
You know, there are there have been a number of smaller companies who have said, okay, this is a vertical area that we'd like to be help cities with. So we'll help them manage scooters, or we'll help them with taxis or specific areas. But this idea that there actually is a digital representation of an entire city and giving the city the ability to manage policy digitally over the entire city is a new idea and is much broader than any one particular vertical application. And so, you know, there have been some very large companies or consulting companies like Deloitte or Accenture or Siemens or so on who have, quote, mobility operating systems or would like to come in and help a city. But that's, again, a tech company having a great idea trying to help a city, as opposed to the city saying, here's what we're interested in. It's important that we're not locked in for 20 years. It's important that what we're using is a standard, and other cities are doing the same thing. And so the approach that cities have taken to get together around open source and this foundation, and then what we do is we take that and implement it in a way that works for them. That's a whole new idea, so there's not a lot of competition out there.
Yeah, I wouldn't. It doesn't seem like it. Now I see model rockets behind you. I have a feeling that you are you a rocket scientist by training?
No, I'm.
I have a feeling you are.
I'm an
maybe our first
electrical engineer.
Well, that's close enough. I was going to say you'd be our first rocket scientist on the podcast.
Yeah, no, what I will tell you is that everybody during this time of COVID finds something to be interested in. And I think what Elon Musk and SpaceX are doing is just phenomenal. And so that's really triggered sort of both a interest in today and also historically. You'll see over my right shoulder is a Saturn V. So I'm just fascinated by all of that.
And Hugh, what do you do in your spare time for hobbies besides following SpaceX and all that?
Yeah, that's really interesting because the minute you say that, the first thing I think is, oh, I spend 9 or 10 hours a day sitting at this desk on Zoom. That's what I do. That's all I do.
Yes. And do you now? I usually ask this question, but it's a little different with you. You're a tech company. I usually ask this if people have a government relations arm, but I'll ask anyways. Do you guys do you have internships?
We don't right now. We don't have internships, though. We care deeply about government relationships and policy and helping people in the. Around cities and states and even the federal government think deeply about how the world could be if cities and the states and federal government thought about digital policy as opposed to just physical policies.
And is that, do you like getting into that with the Open Source Foundation, talking about digital policy and how things could work better in the future?
Yeah, no, I'll just give you an example. A phenomenal organization that cities effectively have is the U.S. Conference of Mayors. And what we've really discovered is that the government agencies that care the most directly about people are mayors and city governments, because they're obviously they're the closest to what goes on for residents. And so we work really closely and follow the U.S. Conference of Mayors. Because it's a organization of very caring, I'll call them city executives, who are trying to do the right thing and have effectively banded together through this organization, the U.S. Conference of Mayors. And so it's a great way for us to help sensitize them to what the opportunities might be. You know, one of our advisors to our company is Mayor Stephen Benjamin from South Carolina. He was the president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors and has become a big fan of what we're doing, and so he advises us. So that's a big focus for us, for instance.
Well, Hugh, it has been great, great to have you on the show. Very nice guy, very smart. I'm going to call you a rocket scientist, even though you don't want to.
Thank you.
You know, and great to learn about your company. I would encourage people to, they can check out your website and check out you on LinkedIn. And for our listeners out there, remember you can follow us on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can also sign up for our Monday email at thepoliticallife.com. Comes out, you guessed it, every Monday. Comes out with the show. And we hope you have a great week, and we will see you next Monday.